The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericaempowerment.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Do you ever feel stuck on a hamster wheel, constantly running but getting nowhere? The secret is actually quite simple. When you fall in love with yourself, everything else falls into place, personally and professionally. It's time to get unstuck, reclaim your personal power, and recapture your zest for living. Now, here's your host, Deborah Jane Wells.
Hi there, this is Deborah Jane Wells, life coach and Reiki master. Thanks for tuning in to Choose Your Energy, Change Your Life. Today's theme is Dancing with Your Divine, from Breakdown to Breakthrough. I'm pleased to welcome back our guest from last week's episode, my dear friend, Reverend Dr. Patricia Keel. Patricia is a dynamic spiritual teacher and international radio station host. As founding minister of Unity of Berkeley and president of Spirit Matters, she's been delivering powerful spiritual growth programs for over 17 years. Patricia's passion is to awaken and support people to experience their oneness with the divine. You'll find links to her programs on the guest tab of my host page on voiceamerica.com. Patricia, thank you for joining us again today.
Hi, Deborah. I'm so happy to be back with you and to share the show today.
Well, and we're thrilled to have you back. And as you know, each week we explore the transformative power of loving yourself unconditionally from many different perspectives and how choosing to fuel yourself with constructive core energy based in love, respect, curiosity, compassion, and gratitude can change your life from victim to victory, from breakdown to breakthrough. In this first segment, Patricia and I will discuss our experience with the frustration, scarcity, and blocks that result in victimhood and breakdown when we fuel ourselves with fear-based energy. And when I refer to being a victim, I mean choosing to be a victim to our own fears and limiting beliefs. As a life coach and Reiki master, I help people who are stuck in the hamster wheel approach to life, trapped by fear and the mistaken belief that busyness is the same as purpose. They can't stand the way they're living, but feel powerless to stop. So, Patricia, what were the ramifications of choosing the hamster wheel of fear-based energy in your life?
You know, Deborah, it's kind of interesting because I love my life so much today and things are working so smoothly and I feel such a sense of connection to not only my purpose, but to my family and all my relationships. And it's almost difficult for me to take my mind back to those times and those places in my life where things were not working. But I do, they're such benchmarks for me, and I think that it's really important for us to share these experiences with others so that we can really know that there is the possibility of breakthrough in those times when it feels like everything is falling apart in our lives. And I think that what I would really like to share with our listeners is a time in my life. It was quite a while ago. I'm in my mid-60s and coming up on a 66th birthday in a week. And it seems like forever ago that I was dealing with a lot of stress in my personal life. I was going through a divorce, and actually it was my second divorce. So, you know, there's a little red light going on about how I wasn't able to handle really intimate relationships. And my technique was to leave. That was my solution. Let's get out of here. This isn't working. Certainly, that's a fear-based model of solution to things that are breaking down. But, you know, at this particular time in my life, I was dealing with the divorce. I was dealing with my own addictive behavior. In my case, it was alcohol. And that was a pattern in my family. So I did a lot of shrinking on that. But, you know, it really, the shrinking helped me see it. But it was really my own willingness to go more deeply inside myself that helped me make the shift and the change. But even in all of that, I also ended up, you know, as a single mom. And my daughter was diagnosed with cancer at age 13. So this was sort of, and my dad had died. So, you know, if you look at those lists, you've seen those lists where they say, if you have this, you know, if you have a death in the family, if you have a divorce, if you lose your job, if you have, you know, they give you the scale of 1 to 100 of how bad your life is and how stressed you ought to be. I think I was like at about a 300 at that moment in my life. And I'm sure you can relate, and you've got clients who have similar kinds of situations that begin to pile up on us. And, you know, I was really running at that time. And the whole idea that you mentioned earlier about the belief that somehow if we do more, kind of ramp up, we get on that hamster wheel, we do more, we fill up our time, that will really solve the problems that we're dealing with. That was kind of where I was. I was working harder, you know, going to more shrink appointments, reading more books, and trying to be the perfect mother. It just plain wasn't working. And I'm sure that you can probably relate to that in dealing with your clients, I would imagine, Deborah.
Well, and, you know, part of what happens with the hamster wheel is that I think that what we want to do most of all is distract ourselves from going inside and looking at the truth of our lives. Going inside and understanding how frequently and deeply fear is our primary fuel, our primary decision-making, you know, juice. And, you know, you mentioned in terms of ending your second marriage. I mean, I was married before for 17 years and divorced after 17 years. Mm-hmm. And it's not that ending something, it's not that ending a relationship is never the highest good, or never the optimal course. It is like everything else. What energy is underneath it? If fear, or one of its many ugly cousins, all the synonyms for fear, you know, anger, avoidance, frustration, etc. If that's fueling your decision or your feeling about whatever's going on, then it's the fear that you want to look at. But if love, you know, if ultimately you're in touch with yourself, your authentic self, and in fact, sometimes the most loving thing to do is to end the relationship in the current form so that each of you can then release the attachment to go learn the rest of your lessons with someone else. Because if the universe, if you're here to learn certain things, the universe is going to keep sending you situations to help you learn what you're here to do, to help you do your job. And sometimes we reach the end of the journey with a friend, with a significant other, in terms of having done the work we were meant to do together. And now others are optimally suited to help us continue our own journeys.
Well, that certainly resonates with me. And I think, you know, I have a really sweet relationship with my, well, it would be both my ex-husbands, but one of them has passed away. But with the father of my daughter, we get along very well. In fact, I'm even able to bring a friend and go up and stay in his house in Lake Tahoe. And, you know, the family, when we get together and everyone gets together, there's this massive combination of and permutation of wives, ex-wives, spouses, ex-spouses, stepkids. It's just, you know, sometimes it's hard. I remember my son's graduation. It was hard for my son's friends to figure out, you know, who's related to whom and who's the mom and the stepmom. And, you know, but in the end, it's all worked out. It's just those, during those times when, you know, I like to think of it as a breakdown. It feels like breakdown internally. That's the time that we really need to be willing to go deeply within ourselves instead of looking at the outer and trying to manage the outer, which for me was what I was constantly trying to do. And this is where, you know, it's interesting you're talking about the fear and the love. And I think when I look back in my own life, the love was always there, and the love and the fear were somehow woven together in those moments. And there were times when I was aware that how I was loving myself would mean that I would have to disconnect in the relationship. I would have to move away from the relationship in order to really care for a part of myself that had somehow either died or just not been allowed to flower. And that love, I think, is what really sustained me and really moved me forward in my life and really brought me into a deep connection with the God of my being, with the divine. At the same time, there was also the fear going on. So it was never a black or white situation at all in my experience, because the fear was always connected to the outer. The fear was connected to kind of base survival energies. How will I make it? Will I be able to do it as a single mom? Will I be able to support my kids? How will I manage my time? You know, how will I give my kids the things that they need? Even in having co-parenting, which I did, that fear could become an overwhelming thing. So, you know, I think part of what's really important in this, and I'm sure you do this when you work with your clients, is really not only acknowledging the love that we have for ourselves and really deepening the awareness of the gifts that we've been called to bring into the world and how we can stay in touch with those gifts and honor them in our relationships, but also looking at what it is that we're afraid of and really feeling that fear, because in the feeling of it, the more we can really get in touch with it, the more it begins to dissipate, and the energy of the love, which is what really fuels us all the time, becomes more more significant for us, and we're able to manage in the outer with that love as the fuel rather than the fear. So, you know, I just want to bring that out, because I think so many times we go into the whoppity wop of being all fear, and we get stuck there, or all love, and we don't acknowledge that underlying anxiety, doubt, confusion that for me was always what was driving the fear.
Sitting with the fear and being with it, not feeling compelled to run from it or just, you know, distract ourselves from it in the many ways that we do. You know, we talked about using overworking. You talked about addiction, and addiction takes many forms. They aren't all chemical. But, you know, chemical ones are common. We use food to distract ourselves. We use shopping to distract ourselves. Some people use gambling to distract themselves. Others use sex to, you know, it is this, the pain. There's the belief that the pain will become unbearable if we actually get real with it and go in and look. But my experience is that the opposite happens, that when you go inside, when you have insatiable curiosity, and that's what we're going to talk about in our final segment, the power of curiosity. When you are paying attention all the time and have insatiable curiosity about what's going on and where its roots are and how it might be an opportunity, how that fear might be an opportunity, a messenger about additional opportunities for growth, and you go inside and you look at it, it's a profound experience. It shifts everything for you. And that is how the transforming into love doesn't happen with, you know, sucking it up and living in the land of denial or distracting yourself and working constantly. It has to do with looking, going in there and looking early and often at every little thing, from the verbs you use when you catch yourself saying, I have to, or I should have. I mean, that tips you off right there. So just knowing what to look for and then being willing to do it. And it does transform the relationship. You know, I went on from my divorce to marry again and in the process acquire a 3-year-old stepson. And, you know, without going into all the details because we don't have time and our focus is on you, but, you know, same journey, different details. Lots of chaos, lots of fear for all the parties involved, lots of wanting to do the best thing, everybody wanting to do the best thing for the child. And thrilled that, despite the fact that none of us were perfect at it, and sometimes our own fears caused us to do the least constructive things we could do, you know, the universe, ultimately the love won out for all of us, and we have a great relationship, all of us now. And in fact, my son is getting married in March back in Maryland, and I'm going to be the one officiating at the wedding. So it's just, you know, it's a journey, And that going in to look at the fear and knowing that it is a messenger, it is not to be something to be afraid of. It's to be embraced as a messenger of where to go next, where the possibilities are next.
And you know, that's why for most of us, we need someone to companion this journey. And, you know, whether it's a coach or in my case, I initially had a therapist, but then when I really got in touch with my addiction, I joined a 12-step group. And that was very empowering because I was able to hear my own doubt, hear my own confusion, hear my own pain in the voices of those in that group, and to really move a bit out of my denial. For me, I had a long period. I refer to it as my couch period. I had a big couch in my living room after I got divorced. I bought this great, big, huge, very soft couch, and I called it the no commitment couch. I had some idea at the time that I was going to start dating and that whatever happened on the couch was not going to be serious. And so it was kind of a funny little thing about the no commitment couch. But during this period in my life, I spent hours and hours on that couch, just being with what was in my own life and internally. And it was really powerful to have the companioning of others in these meetings, and also in my case, a therapist. I don't think coaches were really such a big deal back then.
Well, in our next segment, we're going to have an opportunity for you to tell us all what happened with you in the commitment couch.
No, it's the no commitment.
The no commitment. Well, no, but I think somehow, I think you made a commitment, honey. It just wasn't the commitment you thought you'd be making. Right now, we've got time for a short break, and we'll be back in 2 minutes.
Find out what makes the most successful people tick. Keep listening to the Voice America Empowerment Channel. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com.
Inspired by today's show? Visit Deborah at djwlifecoach.com and click on the current offers tab to access her proven life coaching programs and tools. Everything from her signature workbooks and videos to entertaining and inspiring blogs and newsletters. You'll even have the opportunity to sign up for a 60-minute complimentary coaching session. If someone offered you a precious gift for an hour of your time, would you be interested? That's what Deborah offers in a comp session. It isn't a brief demo or sample. It's a full 45-minute coaching session focused on your current real-life challenges, plus 15 minutes to discuss any questions you may have about her approach. Those who've experienced Deborah's comp sessions will tell you that when you show up fully committed to your own growth and open to the possibilities for transformation, big breakthroughs happen. What have you got to lose other than your fears and limiting beliefs? Visit the current offers tab on djwlifecoach.com. Choose your energy and change your life.
Hi, I'm Ed Krell, CEO of Destination Maternity. We proudly support the March of Dimes work in reducing premature births. Almost 500,000 babies are born too soon in the United States. We're helping the March of Dimes fund cutting-edge research and life-saving programs to help moms in our communities have full-term pregnancies and healthy babies. Join us during Prematurity Awareness Month in working together for stronger, healthier babies. Visit marchofdimes.com.
Friend us on Facebook to keep up with what's empowering the world. Voice America Empowerment.
You are listening to Choose Your Energy, Change Your Life with Deborah Jane Wells. If you have a question or comment for the program today, please call us toll free at 888-346-9141. That's 888-346-9141. Or you may send an email to Deborah at djwlifecoach.com. Now, back to Choose Your Energy, Change Your Life.
Hi, everyone. This is Deborah. Welcome back to Choose Your Energy, Change Your Life with today's guest, Reverend Dr. Patricia Keel. In the previous segment, we talked about how choosing fear-based core energy wreaks havoc in our lives. In this second segment, Patricia and I will examine our experience with the transformation, abundance, and flow that result in victory and breakthrough. When we fuel ourselves with love-based energy, characterized by respect, curiosity, compassion, and gratitude. You know, the secret is actually quite simple. When you fall in love with yourself, everything else falls into place, personally and professionally. Choosing love as your core energy changes your perceptions, opportunities, relationships, and priorities. You get unstuck, reclaim your personal power, and recapture your zest for living, moving yourself forward into a life you love. When love transforms your relationship with yourself, it transforms your personal life, your work, and the world. So, Patricia, what were the ramifications of getting off the hamster wheel and choosing love-based energy in your life?
Deborah, I think that for me, what started happening was and part of it was perhaps separating from my relationship in my marriage. I got married when I was very young. I was 23 in my first marriage, and I basically had been married for quite a long time. And I think that I kind of was going with the flow of what I thought I was supposed to do as a wife, and even, you know, I was working at the time as a real estate agent, real estate broker. But I think what started happening for me in this time period was getting in touch with qualities inside myself that had always been there, but that I hadn't really paid attention to. They were, you know, I think of it often as a kind of a divine discontent that I had. Mm-hmm. And when I started paying attention to what was underneath that, it became very clear to me that I had a deep, deep longing to be connected to something greater than myself, to the I call it the divine, the God of my being, to my spiritual center. And this was something that in my 20s and 30s, I just didn't pay any attention to at all. But as I moved into my 40s, it was something that I really woke up to. And I started really listening to what this was. It was like a calling inside me, not a calling in the same sense initially that you would think of as a professional calling, but it was a calling nevertheless. And as I began to pay attention to it, the books I started reading were different. There was more of a spiritual bent to everything that I was focused on. It was personal growth, but it always was about connecting into the God center and what that would mean for me. I started going to a Unity church here in Marin County, and very quickly I was just driven, literally, to take every class I could find. And I remember one of my teachers asking me in one moment, you know, have you ever thought about ministry? And I think my head spun around when Jack said that, because I hadn't. But there was some kind of recognition in that question that really went to the core of my being. And it planted a seed for me, which over the years I've planted for others, because it was such a great gift that he gave me. And really what unfolded with all of this was my beginning to take a number of classes in Unity and traveling the country to become licensed as a Unity teacher. And ultimately, I ended up starting my own church in Berkeley. I mean, kind of a crazy way to unfold your spiritual community, to start your own church. But that was what was coming for me. I ended up going to Matthew Fox's university and getting my doctorate. At age 59, I got my doctorate, and I had this feeling when I was in my 50s, well, you know, I'm going to be 59 anyway. I might as well just start this and do this. It took me 6 years, but it was a beautiful, powerful experience and really just shifted my life in such an extraordinary way. And now my whole life is really focused on helping and supporting other people to connect with that divine presence within themselves. And it's not that I want to make ministers out of everyone, but I know that now so many people like yourselves, you know, what you're doing has a very deep, deep connection to something greater than yourself. And you connect people into that in the work you do with them as a coach, whether it's helping them in their relationships or helping them with their work, or as you say, writing your book or supporting other people in writing their books. And so my kind of loving myself has really transformed my entire life into this beautiful, grace-filled ministry. And the ministry is really my life. Everything I'm doing is about really supporting other people, connecting them into the divinity that they are, and walking through that grace and on that path of grace in whatever it is that they are called to do in the world.
Well, we are all in ministry, whether we realize it or not, in every moment and how we show up. We are all in ministry, and we can't know how we're going to touch another's life. That's why the keeping ourselves, being conscious of any fears we have and clearing ourselves of that and just coming from love and showing up and being there with the energy of love underneath, you're going to be the perfect conduit for whatever's ideal in that situation, whatever that person needs, whether it's someone to listen to, a shoulder to cry on, someone to laugh with, a teacher, someone who might share a new principle or a new possibility, someone who can encourage. Those are all the gifts of ministry, and those are gifts that we have the opportunity to give, however we self-label in terms of spirituality and practice. Those who label themselves as atheists or agnostic, they're ministering. Whatever level on which their spirit is interacting in the universe, they are ministering, and they are being ministered to.
Absolutely. I totally agree with you. And there's a spark. I know the church that I used to go to in Marin, part of what they claimed as their mission statement was discovering the spark of divinity within each heart. And I think that is there for people. And it's just how we want to language it and want to use it. And for me, the piece of this really that has been most profound has been the willingness to let go of what sometimes felt like my very best plans and my very best solutions to how to move forward in my life, and to be willing to be in that place of exquisite unknown, the place of stillness, the place of silence, and to trust that there was a presence much greater than my ability and my small self that could guide my life and could connect me to a greater purpose. And that's been such an extraordinary journey. I think probably initially that was part of what was going on for me on my couch during that couch period many years ago. I wasn't able to identify it in the same way that I can identify it now. And, even now, right now, it's kind of funny. I'm sitting here with you, Deborah, and I'm here with all our listeners. And I am, again, sitting on a couch. And the couch I'm sitting on is in a room that I call my temple room. And it's a space where I create all of my radio programs. It's where I come to meditate and to be still and connect. So it's interesting. I'd never thought about that before until we're just talking today about the couch. I'm still on the couch. I'm still on the couch. But it's a very different way of being aware of this presence in my life and tuning in. And, we're tuned in together in this way with all of our listeners. So I'm grateful for that. Grateful for the curiosity of what it is that the divine has in store for all of us, even in the next, the next part of the show that we're doing together. It's all just a lot of grace flowing through and curiosity.
Well, and if you're talking about still being on the couch, is a reminder that the problem was never outside of me. The problem was never outside of you. The couch was never the problem. It was what you bring to the couch. It was the energy you bring. It was the relationship you have with you. And of course, the relationship that you now bring to that couch is a very different one than the many couches you may have been on through the years.
Well, and what's really funny? It's funny we're talking about my couches. Roy would laugh so hard. Roy is my wonderful partner in life. And the first thing he wanted to do when he moved into my house was get rid of that couch. Uh-huh. You know, it was very feminine and it was well worn and many kids and people had slept on it over the years. And it was like, we got to get this thing out of here. The no commitment couch is gone. So it's kind of interesting. And I'm sure that our listeners have their own experience of things that we become attached to and that sort of create certain resonant field in our life. It may not be a physical thing like a piece of furniture, but it might be certain places that we go or even some of those addictive habits that we have that give us a sense of security. But again, as you say, it's not about that. It's really about what's inside of us, because everywhere I go, there I am. Hello.
Yeah. And I find, for example, food, because one of my addictions was food, and particularly sugar, refined sugar. I used to say I would, you know, I just like to put it in the needle and put it in the vein. And one of the great, you know, now that I live with so much more mindfulness about how I feed all of my senses, I don't try to use food and junk food, especially, to fill a void that has nothing to do with food, so it's never going to fill it. Not enough Twinkies on the planet to fill a need that has nothing to do with food. But one of the great blessings for me still is I know if I don't get it energetically, which is the way I try to get it, by paying attention and feeling it, the absolute indicator for me is when I find myself. And it's not necessarily now reaching for unhealthy food, but it's eating more food than I know I need, that I'm not physically hungry, but, you know, I want to go get a snack or I want to go celebrate with, you know, a yogurt or I want to go. And yet I know that what's happening is that there's something bubbling up in me, probably fear, that I'm not ready to look at or not even aware of. And so I'm going to go quick, try to smother it with my favorite, you know, my chosen method. So it's not that, you know, it's not like you conquer these things once and for all and they never come back. They are there and can be the messengers for you of when you started to drift a bit. And then you have a choice every moment, whether you're going to pay attention and do something with that that's constructive and get yourself, figure out where you're out of alignment and how to get back in alignment with love. Or you're going to allow that to go on. And the other thing that I'd love to share just before our break is you talked about planning. And Patricia will laugh because she has sitting in front of her a color-coded Excel spreadsheet that guides her through what I have in mind as the loose structure for this program. My husband always says she's never happiest until she can have an Excel spreadsheet for whatever it is that's going on in her life. And so, you know, and I have that great engineering mind and ability to really structure things optimally and do this and that. But one of the big lessons I had to learn was to stop stamping my plans in concrete. It's not that having a plan is a bad thing. In fact, it's a good thing. But I always say now, my plans are a lowercase p plan. Because I am always tuned to the frequency. And if the universe sends something else through, I am going to be listening and I'm going to be ready to throw that plan out the window. And so that's what I find now. And in the work that I do with my clients, it's all about getting those divine downloads, getting the inspired ideas, and then looking at each of them, going underneath, sitting with your energy, figuring out when I think about going in this direction, do I feel expansive and open and loving and warm, or do I feel constricted and blocked and, you know, hands out in front of me? And if what you've got is basically open, expansive love energy under all of them, then take one baby step. Don't make an 87 page, 55 point, 35 year plan of every detail. Just figure out what would the next right thing be and do it for each of them, each of the ones that feel like they're love. And then go about your business because you've got other stuff to do. And the universe is going to get back to you. And it's going to get back to you in the form of people who come into your life, of doors that open spontaneously, of in ways that, honey, on your most brilliant day, you couldn't dream up what the universe can deliver if you'll just stay wide open.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, and that's why people need coaches, you know. I can connect you in and support your connection with the divine, and then Deborah, take it away. Help with creating the plan.
Yeah. Well, and for many of my clients, the role I serve is if they're on the hamster wheel I was on, I'm teaching them how to let go of that plan and how to just breathe and be more loving with themselves and give themselves more space. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the role curiosity plays in all that. But right now, it's time for a short break, and then we'll be back in 2 minutes.
Change your world. Change your life. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com.
I'm Dr. Sam Nussbaum with WellPoint. We proudly support the March of Dimes work in reducing premature birth. Almost 500,000 babies are born too soon in the United States. We're helping the March of Dimes fund cutting-edge research and life-saving programs. These programs, such as Centering Pregnancy, help moms in our communities have full-term pregnancies and healthy babies. Please join us during Prematurity Awareness Month in working together for stronger, healthier babies. Visit marchofdimes.com.
Inspired by today's show? Visit Deborah at djwlifecoach.com and click on the Current Offers tab to access her proven life coaching programs and tools. Everything from her signature workbooks and videos to entertaining and inspiring blogs and newsletters. You'll even have the opportunity to sign up for a 60-minute complimentary coaching session. If someone offered you a precious gift for an hour of your time, would you be interested? That's what Deborah offers in a comp session. It isn't a brief demo or sample. It's a full 45-minute coaching session focused on your current real-life challenges, plus 15 minutes to discuss any questions you may have about her approach. Those who've experienced Deborah's comp sessions will tell you that when you show up fully committed to your own growth and open to the possibilities for transformation, big breakthroughs happen. What have you got to lose other than your fears and limiting beliefs? Visit the Current Offers tab on djwlifecoach.com. Choose your energy and change your life.
Success starts here. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com. It's your world.
You are listening to Choose Your Energy, Change Your Life with Deborah Jane Wells. If you have a question or comment for the program today, please call us toll-free at 888-346-9141. That's 888-346-9141. 346-9141. Or you may send an email to Deborah at djwlifecoach.com. Now, back to Choose Your Energy, Change Your Life.
Hi, everyone. This is Deborah, and welcome back to our show with my guest, Reverend Dr. Patricia Keel. In the first two segments, we examined the transformative power of choosing unconditional love, respect, curiosity, compassion, and gratitude to fuel our core energy. In this week, in our final segment of the show, we're going to take a closer look at the power of curiosity to not only silence, but make friends with our inner critic, reduce our stress, and open the door to endless possibilities.
So, Deborah, you know, one of the things that I'm really aware of in my own life is when I'm in a stressful place, or just speaking of your food challenge, you know, when I'm going for those barbecue potato chips, I'm not always tuned into this beautiful gift of curiosity. So I'm just wondering, I mean, we can think about it now, we can talk about it on the show, but in those moments when we kind of go unconscious, how can we lift ourselves? What can we use as a way to really move into this graceful gift of curiosity?
Well, what I noticed is that, you know, I mentioned how for me, food was the warning sign, the indicator. And I find it's really useful to get curious in your own life and look for the indicators and then do whatever you can to raise your consciousness about them. So people who do affirmations, for example, that's part of what they're doing. They're reprogramming themselves to think differently, to notice when things show up. I just looked across the room. This is my coaching office that I'm in, and I have some sayings written on these multicolored boards that are around my space. Mine, of course, are not white. Mine are like purple and green and blue and pink, and I got to have that color feel. And at the top of one of them, one of my favorite things I said to a client during a coaching session one time is, judging is very bad. So, of course, in case you don't get it, the humor in that is that the moment we label something bad, we're judging. So I had said to my client, this is like my download that came during the session, you're working on like what affirmation could she come up with for herself that would help? And so I came up with judging is very bad. And then after it says LOL for me, because what I do after I say it is laugh. And so finding ways to just to notice and retune yourself. And, you know, on my journey, I have a tagline for curiosity. It says, I do not judge. I wonder why. And, you know, I wonder why it's a different energy. I get lighter and, you know, a little giddier when I say, oh, I wonder why. It's like a 2-year-old or a 5-year-old to whom, you know, the endless question is why? Why? And you answer, why that? Well, why? Well, why? And if you can stay in that place of innocent curiosity, non-judging curiosity, that for me, that was the key to this loving myself thing. It was the first of the 4 additional attributes of love that I discovered and really worked with, because I could change that judging experience. I could get out of the prison that I was keeping myself in with that inner critic by instead going to curiosity.
So what I'm kind of hearing from you, and, you know, I'm just stuck on my potato chips, but that's because I don't do a lot of judgment anymore. Of course, there was a time I did, but what I'm getting is that there's a whole awareness piece that we can mine that is almost before the curiosity, so that we know what to wonder why about. And yeah, that maybe we're looking in our lives and just noticing these recurring patterns of either things that we do or certain attitudes that we have. And we begin to write those down. They become like little red flags or little buttons that get pushed. And then when they pop up, then the curiosity and I wonder why comes up for us. And that becomes the recurring kind of mindset that we have. I wonder why I'm eating those potato chips again. You know, yeah. And that's kind of a cool thing. I like that. I wonder why. And whether it's silencing the inner critic, because that's the flag that popped, or just reducing stress because we're feeling some sort of a charge in the stomach, or our breathing has gotten crazy. It's really a beautiful, it's a beautiful way to move through that energy and move into the next deepening. Because it's not always that we understand it, but at least we're experiencing it in a different way. So very beautiful. Talk a little bit, if you would, about this idea that we have so many different perceptions and how, you know, we're looking at our world through these multifaceted lenses and how that impacts this whole experience.
Well, I came to understand that there is no absolute reality. There's the version of reality I choose to see based on the lenses I choose to look with. And those lenses get formed through the years by a host of influences. They begin in our earliest days with our family of origin and the environment we're raised in. And then there's our culture and our country, you know, in our country's culture, the culture in a city can be different. If we're raised in some form of organized spiritual practice or organized religion, we pick up lenses there. And so often, out of a need to feel safe and survive, to be accepted and belong, because let's face it, when we're really young, we need other people to survive, literally. We aren't capable of, you know, self-sustaining the moment we come out of the womb. And it takes years to realize that, in fact, we have everything we seek within and everything we need within. Some of us don't get that lesson at all. Some of us don't get it until we're in our 50s or 60s. Heck, I have clients who are in their 80s. And I'm pleased to say I have clients in their 20s who are getting it then. But just understanding that I'm choosing the way I want to feel based on what I'm choosing to think about my experience. And one of my favorite stories, and I think we've got time for it here, still delights me, involves my son. So many of my favorite stories involve my son. So I used to have a home in the Blue Ridge Mountains, and when my son was around 11, he went off to a kids' camp. We wanted him to make friends there and just enjoy himself. He went off to a kids' camp to learn to play tennis and golf for the day. And my husband, his father, is a tennis player, so I'm sure part of him was hoping Matt would become smitten with tennis. But Matt didn't. Matt was always his own Matt. And he came home smitten with golf. Neither of us were golfers. My ex had been a golfer, so I had to sort of immediately get past that hurdle. And so he wanted to play golf, but he loved it so, and it so delighted him. And we were in the Blue Ridge Mountains, honey, with a house on a golf course. I mean, really? You think God put us there without having something in mind? And so we began playing golf. We took lessons with the pro. We would play golf every afternoon at 4 p.m. when there'd be no one behind us, so we didn't have to worry about holding anybody up. We would go out and just play golf. We had the rule of unlimited mulligans, which is like unlimited do-overs if you're not a golfer. And, oh, my God, it was utter joy. We would stop and search for golf balls in the woods and find like 17 at once and be thrilled, and it was just all grand. Then things changed. I switched consulting firms, and in this new firm, golf bordered on being a religion. All of the partners were expected to play, and I was a very senior partner, and they were expected to play with their colleagues and clients all the time. It was an important aspect of networking in business. No longer was golf a stress-free, delightful. Oh, my chest is tightening up just telling this. Seriously, there's an example of noticing when you go back and tell these old stories. So I'm going to let that go. So anyway, the next thing you know, honey, I'm tomahawking clubs down the fairway when the shot doesn't go my way. I'm swearing like a sailor. And of course, children learn what they see. So it wasn't long before my 11-year-old was tomahawking his clubs down our fairway too. And he was swearing like a sailor. And this was not optimal. It's not respectful to the fairway. When you throw a club end over end down the fairway, it takes divots out of it. And it wasn't good to have my energy in this place, so we developed a rule. And it was basically, if anybody got in that place, you had to go get in the golf cart and have a timeout until you got yourself back under control, and then you could come back on the course. Well, I must tell you that I went through a period where my son and I were in the golf cart together far more than we were on the fairway, because I was not doing well. Now, here's the thing. Nothing had changed. Golf was still golf. It had been wonderful and delightful and beautiful when I was energizing it with love. But when I began energizing it with judgment and fear and the possibility of rejection, it became a very different experience. And of course, my son wanted to perform too. And he saw that when he couldn't perform, the way to deal with it was to do what Deborah did. So one day we're sitting in the golf cart, a breakthrough moment. And I've got my arms crossed, you know, and he's got his arms crossed, and we're scowling, you know, we're just looking down. We're tired. It's probably the 17th time we've been in the cart in this round of golf. And I said, Matt, this has just got to stop. We can't keep doing this, hon. This isn't fun for either of us. I said, I think I know what's going on. When I'm playing golf now, I'm hearing the voices of my new partners ridiculing me and harassing me and, you know, putting me down and making me feel bad. I'm imagining them in there in my head, and I can't keep putting them in there, Matt. I said, what do you think? What's going on in your head? And he looked at me with all the confusion and disgust of a child who thinks his parent has gone around the bend. And he said, I don't even know your new partners, Deborah. So Matt had his own gremlins going on. And together we figured out what was happening and got ourselves back under control. But, you know, I ask in some absolute way, is golf good or is golf bad? And the answer is, it depends.
Yeah, that's a great story. That's really great. I just see the picture of the two of you, arms crossed, sitting in the golf cart.
Well, and it's so true, that lesson, that principle is true of everything in our lives. It's not just true of golf. It's true of my relationship with my mother-in-law. It's true of my relationship with my clients. It's so true in all our relationships. And here's, you know, in our final minutes in this segment today, curiosity can transform your relationships. When you stop telling yourself you know exactly what's going on, there's only one possible interpretation for what he said or what she said and what it means when she rolls her eyes like that or she scrunches her shoulders or her tone of voice is like that or whatever. There are so many lenses each of us are carrying around in any given moment. It is nearly impossible for you to be the sole cause of anything anyone else is doing. You just got too much competition. You couldn't possibly be the sole source for it. In fact, even when it absolutely looks like what's being said is being directed right at you, and it's all about what you did and how you didn't show up, and, you know, the reality is, honey, they could just as easily be talking to their mother, their father, their brother, their ex-husband, or somebody else that you don't even know. You might have done something that tweaked that energy, but it may literally have nothing to do with you. So get curious. Get curious about your own reaction to it, what it stirs up in you. Get curious about what could be going on for the other person. Don't try to fix it for them. Don't try to psychoanalyze them. That never goes well. Just try to relax into it and wait for the insight, because it will come. It always comes. And that brings us to the end of our show for today. This is Deborah Jane Wells signing off for now. Tune in again next week when I'll be sharing a sneak preview of content from my upcoming book. So next week, listeners, it'll just be you and me. My book is Choose Your Energy, Change Your Life, and it'll be available from Hay House Balboa Press in spring 2013. Many thanks again to my guest today, Reverend Dr. Patricia Keel, and to my incredible Voice America production team, including my engineer, Roland Maldonado, executive producer, Randall Libero, and everyone else at Voice America who keeps me on track and makes this show possible. When you visit my VoiceAmerica.com host page, you'll find more information about upcoming episodes and the nature of life coaching, with opportunities to subscribe to my blog, social media feeds, and special offers to guide you on your journey to wholeness. You can even listen to recordings of past episodes. If you'd like to learn more about the transformative power of life coaching and the 60-minute complimentary coaching sessions I offer, listen to the recording of my very first episode on January 9, 2013, starting about 37 minutes in for an insightful overview. Remember, when you fall in love with yourself, everything else falls into place, personally and professionally. You are loved and loving, blessed and a blessing. Namaste.
Thanks again for listening to Choose Your Energy, Change Your Life. Please rejoin your host, Deborah Jane Wells, again next Wednesday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 10 a.m. Pacific Time, on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. It's time to get off that hamster wheel and start fulfilling your destiny by creating a life you love.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit VoiceAmerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.